This morning I'll be reading from Judges chapter 12. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years. And they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, and bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger.
Always encouraging to see a full house this morning. We appreciate your presence. We certainly encourage our visitors. If you haven't had a chance yet to fill out a visitor's card, love to have a record of your visit. We're thankful you're here. We just finished a wonderful meeting with Tim Stevens. What an encouragement it was for us to hear the word preached and to focus in on our worship to God and our singing. I know that will bless us. Let us not forget what we've learned this week. I'm going to be away next Sunday in a meeting with the North Gardendale Church in Birmingham area. I'll be gone through Sunday through Wednesday, be back later next week. Appreciate your prayers in that endeavor. This morning I want to talk to you about raising children. I want to talk with you about generations. I want to talk with you about crossing rivers. And I want to look at the example of the children of Israel. I want to look at three generations. A generation that was in Egypt, a generation that was in the wilderness, and then the generation that lived after the land was conquered. We can learn some lessons for us. We have so many families with us, so many with young children and children that are coming here. As parents, I hope we can humbly learn about the great task that lies before us as we try to raise our children to serve the Lord. We just read from Judges 2. And one of the things in looking at the passage there in Judges 2 is that generations are very different. You've got one generation. This is the generation that crossed the Jordan River. We've talked about the Red Sea crossing, the Jordan crossing. And this generation was described as the generation who had seen all the great works of the Lord. There's something about fighting a battle, standing, going through change. By the way, the crossing of rivers here could well be described as a life-changing event. You cross the river and you don't go back. You cross the river on purpose. You cross the river in ways that doesn't seem possible. But through the Lord, you cross it. The past is gone. The river keeps you from going back. This generation that saw those things and faced those things lived for a while on this earth. One of the interesting things that you study throughout history, and I'm repeating some things in our Bible class, but historically, God's people do not do a good job in instilling faith in the next generation. And brethren, can I say, and I say this for myself, as well as any of us here, look in the mirror. If God's people historically have not done a good job in instilling faith in their children, that likely could be me. Let's not look around at somebody else in the audience and say, this person's not doing a good job. I need to look and just be humbled and understand there's a war, a battle, one we can win. But I want my child to stand. I want my children to know the Lord and have a conviction in Him and know the great things that He's done. But what happened here as the generation that crossed, the generation that followed after them, it said about that generation, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord. That's what I want to talk with you about today. How do we get our children to the point of having a living faith? Can I say one more time? It is difficult. If you read in Deuteronomy 6, and I really should have included verses 4 through 6. Does Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6 sound familiar to you? What's the greatest commandment? Remember in Jesus' ministry, he was asked that question, and he quoted Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6. You love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all of your mind. That is the only faith that's going to work. That is the only faith that will create salvation in an individual. That is the faith that I want to instill in my children, and I cannot instill it if I don't have it in my heart. It's like going to war, total war. And in the context of that, after he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, notice the next thing, and there's no question in my mind, there's no accident here. Here's the faith I need to have, and now, my children, the next generation. You shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit down in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Teach, teach. Teach, teach. Emily and I went to the game yesterday. And we were walking down. As we go into the game, you see all kinds of things. People dress certain ways, act certain ways. And I was talking to Emily about things, you know. There was somebody that had tattoos all over their body. And I was telling her, I said, you know, Emily, here's some things that likely is happening here. And Emily was, you know, saying, well, I don't like to think about those people that way. I said, well, I'm not trying to judge them per se, but what I'm trying to do is do like a dad does. I want you to look at things and think about the Lord's will and think about them in the context of God. You know, every moment that I'm spending with my child, I try to find teachable things and try to talk about them. You know what that's like. You know how your parents did you. They talk. Teaching never stops. Verse 10 says, so it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities which you did not build. Notice, Moses here is thinking about entering the promised land, the crossing of the Jordan, about that generation preparing the next. Where we get in trouble, brethren, in instilling faith in our children, we want to make it easy. We want to just kind of make it almost like a catechism where we memorize questions and answers. We don't want our children to go through difficult things and suffer because of what they believe, and we try to make it easy. Biblical faith is never instilled in someone when you take the easy path. There was a funny cartoon, I just included this in the PowerPoint, about a boy had a bad report card. He was trying to find excuses why he had a bad report card. And so he says, what do you think it is, Dad? Heredity or environment? You know, in other words, yeah, let's find an excuse for something. No, that's not how. No. So Moses was looking ahead to the time Israel possessed the land. And he knew that the crossing of the Jordan would represent a life-changing. By the way, have you crossed the Jordan? Have any of us crossed the Red Sea or crossed the Jordan? You're going to find indeed in becoming a Christian that the waters of baptism are likened unto a crossing. An event where we make a commitment to the Lord and we sail out. The past is behind us and ahead now we're trusting God. We all cross the river, so to speak, in becoming a Christian. And we want the next generation to do that. There's no going back when this happens. There's some lessons that we can learn from the failed generation, and sometimes we don't learn the right ones. You know, a lot of times, you know, and it's true, I'll tell you, my kids, when you get to know my kids, they'll probably say, well, you know, I love my parents, but I'll tell you something, they got some things wrong. And you know what? They'll be right. Yeah, we'll make some mistakes. I pray that I can, and I know you and you're teaching your children that we can be successful with God's help, and we're going to need forgiveness and we're going to need help. I want to see my children go to heaven. And I know you want to see your children go to heaven. But sometimes there's a generation that looks back and they start criticizing what the previous generation did and they miss the point. The Bible tells us teaching, instruction, commitment, rebuke, punishment. It's part of distilling faith. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. One of the compliments that Yvette always appreciated, sometimes our children would say this, "Mama's mean." Good. Yeah, we kind of woke that, yeah. Daddy's mean. Sometimes I think Yvette was accusing me. Sometimes she'd be the mean one. I'd be the facilitator. And I hope that wasn't the case. But, you know, sometimes it, in the family, you got the one that, you know, that will sometimes take some of the hard work and bring things down. And as a parents, we work together. But the point is, you don't just let a child go to themselves. It's a compliment, in my view, to be a mean mama or being daddy. When we talk about being mean, is that there's a way you're going to go, and we're going to learn to stand, and if we don't learn it, there's going to be consequences until we do learn it. It's interesting, not everyone that commits and goes down the path of commitment stays in it. The generation before the generation that crossed the Jordan, they crossed the Red Sea. In 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 1, it says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that our fathers were under the cloud and passed through the sea and were baptized into Moses, into the cloud, into the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." Now notice the context here. Baptism, spiritual food, similar to the Lord's Supper. Here was a coming out, a leaving. They left slavery. See, the point is being made. Guys, these generations are our examples. You can start well. You can cut things off. You can go down the path and notice what happened. You can fail too. Verse 5, it says, "But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our example, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lust." How would you know if you have a biblical faith? How would you know? Would you want to know? First off, if you don't want to know. I know that in sermons or in the reading of the Bible, you know, some people, like as one preacher, good friend of mine once described the congregation, he says, every time I got up there to preach to them, it was like Star Trek. The shields would go up, you know, and you could preach and it would bounce off. And that could be true for any of us. We can have these defensive mechanisms because of who's preaching. I'm not going to listen. Because of the subject that's been preaching, I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to admit that I'm wrong. And if that is you, you can call it stubbornness. You can call it whatever it is. You're not going to learn. You're not going to change. That was the problem with that generation. Let me tell you one way to find out whether or not somebody's got a biblical faith. How they complain. How they fuss. How they're constantly looking at others and people and what they did and they didn't do. And woe is me. And this person did that and that person did that. Complain, 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 complain. And when it comes to stand up and fight, they sit on their hands and say, "I've been so discouraged by my brethren." You say, "Larry, can you prove that?" I'll prove that. This is an incredible verse. But you can be amongst the people of God and have a very weak faith and be worldly. Worldly people carry their feelings on their sleeve. Worldly people will find 1,000 reasons not to stand and fight and go in the difficult path. Notice why they wanted to go back. They wanted to cross the Red Sea and go back to Egypt, to the slaves. Why? Now, the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. Now, what kind of intense craving would cause somebody to want to go back to slavery? Was it immorality? Was it, you know, wanting to have a better, easier life? What do they want? They yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic." What? You want to go back into slavery because of melons and onions? But you really do see in worldly people crazy stuff like this. Whether it be the hurt, somebody hurt them, or whether or not they want to go down a path and they don't want to listen and they get upset and they're ready to go back into slavery. No question why they ended up where they were. One writer says, "Backsliders usually are guilty of criticism, condemnation, and complaining. And when it came time to fight, they were ready to retreat." And you see, now Moses later makes a point. Generations oftentimes are very different. Now imagine this. You're there before Moses, and you're getting ready to cross the Red Sea. And your mother and daddy are dead. They died in the wilderness. And you're about, not the Red Sea, but they crossed the Jordan, excuse me. The earlier generation crossed the Red Sea. Now notice the point that Moses makes. "But among these, there was not a man of those who were numbered by Moses and Aaron the priest when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai." You know what that's saying? The previous generation is not crossing. Let me make the point clear. You, if you're going to instill faith in your children, you're going to have to do it because you love God. Not because you're looking around at what brethren do and the standards they have and how they teach or don't teach their children. You do this out of a deep commitment to God. Because what sometimes happens in church history and religious history, you can have an entire generation that is in fact almost useless. And sometimes you see this in congregations. You see sometimes these huge gaps where there's just nobody. It's a failed generation. It's very interesting. Who made it of that generation? Verse 65. "For the Lord said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. So there was not left a man of them except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun." What did that previous generation fail to do? They wouldn't fight when they needed to fight. One of the things that the generation that crossed was about to cross the Jordan, there were some that wanted to have land on the other side of the Jordan, and Moses started talking to them. Numbers 32:7, it says, "Now why will you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over to the land which the Lord has given them? Thus your fathers did." In verse 9, he goes on to talk about how they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel. When it came time to fight, they ran. Are you fully participating in the work of the Lord? You do this for the Lord, not for us. You do this for the Lord, not for the person that hurts you. You do this for the Lord, and when you live that kind of life, your children will see it. I'll guarantee you, you can talk all day long. And you can talk about this and that. Your children not only will hear your words, but they will see your actions. And there is no other way than complete and total commitment. It's not going to work. We've got to remember that. And the Lord will bless us, and we will have great encouragement for what we see in our homes and our families. The next generation, what a battle. Trusting the Lord is a challenge. Trusting the Lord in crossing the river. You got to give things up, buddy. I love the way Joshua puts it. They're getting ready to cross a flooded Jordan River. Have you ever been around a flooded river? It kind of brings chill bumps when you see a flood and you see the power of water. And one of the things I would think, I'm glad I'm not in that. You know, a flood is of great power. And here, the Jordan is flooded. And here they're lining up in formation and they're about to go right into that flooded river by the command of God. And what was going to happen, the priests were going to lead, and the priests were going to march right into that river. Verse 3, when they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests and the Levites bearing it, then ye shall set out from your place and go after it. You may say, that's crazy, we're going to die. I'm not going to march into a flooded river. There was faith there. But notice, yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. The challenge of a biblical faith is to trust God and go down a path that is frightening. But you go down that path because you are confident and you know the source, you know the way. And every one of us, in becoming a Christian, we've got to burn the bridges behind us. We go down a path and we don't know where it's going to lead in this life. You become a Christian, you're taking a great risk. But they were moving forward. They weren't looking back. They weren't fearful. One of the dangers we face, I think, is the tyranny of the familiar. Jesus said, in talking about becoming His disciple, in Luke 9 and verse 62, but Jesus said to him, no one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. Trusting God means going to places that will challenge us. You know, we won't read all the verses, but I just want you to notice that they saw a miracle. Could you imagine seeing the feet of the priest about to go into the water, and you're probably cringing. Oh, man, the Ark of the Covenant's going to be swept away. Man, this is crazy. And those feet touch, and suddenly, whoosh, a flooded river, and now the water's building up. And what would you do if you expect the waters to part in a flooded river? You expect there to be mud, and you expect you'd be bogged down. There was dry ground. What was happening here is Joshua prepared him. He says, and Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you. Verse 11, it says, but the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord of all the earth, is crossing over before you in the Jordan. It's God. And you read about the crossing. Verse 17 puts it this way. Then the priest who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And all the Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan. Would you ever forget this in your life? Would you ever, I'm sure, with kind of a trembling in your stomach, watch those priests go into the Jordan River and then the Jordan part, and now you're walking in. There's the waters on one side. There are the priests remaining. There's dry ground. Would you ever forget that? You know, the previous generation did. When it was the Red Sea. But this generation didn't. These miracles would give them courage to fight because the Lord said, you know, the Lord is with you, that they would be able to take the land. The Lord gave them a leader in which they could trust. You know, one of the critical things about standing by faith is knowing for sure the path to take. I need to know where to stand. If I know God is with me, that's all I need to know, and I'll go down that path. Joshua, the Lord was speaking to him and why he was doing the things with Joshua. It says, the Lord said to Joshua, this day I'll begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel so that you may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. This generation remembered. But now notice about this. God prepared them and prepared them in a certain way that they would know this was coming. Before, Moses didn't go into the promised land, but he was to die before going into the promised land. But notice how Moses prepared them ahead of time. Here's what's going to happen. Here's why it's going to happen. Here's what you're going to do. Verse 50 of Numbers 33, it says, now the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains by Moab, by the Jordan, across from the Jericho, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, when you have crossed the Jordan into the land of Canaan. So this crossing of the Jordan is a very significant event. And then they were to drive out the land, the people in the land. And that basically, even before they took the land, God says, I have past tense, given you the land to possess. What's the temptation when we have success? What is the temptation like here this morning? We have a large number of people before us, and we're thinking, man, you know, things are going well in the work here. What's the temptation when success comes? The temptation is to start to kind of look in the mirror and say, you know, God's pretty lucky to have me. You know, we got it together. We're not like these other congregations out here struggling, but we've got it together. And that's foolishness, you start thinking that way. Deuteronomy 9, the Lord kind of prepares them again before they crossed the Jordan. He says, "Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourselves." Okay? Oh, yeah, we're going to win. Now, why are you going to win? Look at verse 3. "Therefore, understand today that the Lord your God, it is He who goes over before you as a consuming fire." Folks, we see any good. And I'll say this, in the raising of your children, it's not going to be because of how wise you are. It's not going to be because of how great you are. It's going to be because you learned how to trust God and let His power work. He really emphasizes this to these people. Look at verse 4. "Do not think in your heart after the Lord your God has cast out them before you, saying, because of my righteousness, the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess the land. But because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God drives them out from before you, that He may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Folks, you want to know how to spend a successful path? Be in the path of the will of God. You light yourself on the promises of God. And basically, they're about to cross the Jordan. The next day, they're crossing the Jordan. And God says, okay, let me tell you about where you're at. And they're probably sitting there, oh boy, He's going to brag on us. He's going to talk about all the good things we are. Now, notice what He says to them. Verse 6. "Therefore, understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stiff-necked people." We are. Sometimes we look in the mirror of God's Word, we might need to see the head of a mule that needs the old proverbial 2x4 from time to time to pop us over the head. So us stiff-necked mules will be humble. And I want to tell you, brethren, in teaching, if my teaching sometimes may seem harsh or overly personal, the only reason why I try to teach that way is because I know what I need. There are times I need the kick in the head and I need to be humble and understand where the power comes. And there were warnings about disobedience. We won't take time to look at all of this, but he talks about the Jordan, verse 22. "But I must die in this land." This is Moses talking. "I must not cross over the Jordan, but you shall cross over and possess that good land." And then he tends to tell them, listen, folks, you see the blessings of God in your life, let it be humble and let you be obedient people. "Take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God." Later on in verse 24, "For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God." Now notice verse 25. Now the next generation, constantly, constantly looking ahead to the next generation. "When you beget children and grandchildren have grown old in the land and act corruptly and make a carved image in the form of anything and evil inside of the Lord your God to provoke Him to anger," he says, "I'll call to heaven and earth to witness against you this day. You shall surely perish from the land." Okay, we don't want to go there. And you'll see Moses, you see Joshua just pounding it, pounding it, pounding it, pounding it. We need that teaching today. And if you don't understand that, the same statement is made to the church in the book of Hebrews that Moses made to these people. "Therefore, since we're receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire." All right, Moses taught, they crossed the fight, they shouldn't be discouraged as a previous generation, and they eliminated the things that would bring discouragement. One more time, brethren. Am I? Do I? Is that me? You are in a fight. Be fighting with everything you've got. Now, the Jordan gets crossed. And there's a great battle now that they're looking toward. They were going to take the land. That wasn't the greater battle. The next battle that they had to fight was in teaching the next generation. Now, folks, one of the things I appreciate about local churches, and particularly this local church, I appreciate the emphasis that has tried to be made in our leadership, in our work, in our Bible classes, in our efforts to have the very best Bible class teachers to put. There's been enormous effort in this congregation put to try to make our classes what they ought to be, and we can improve. But that's the thing that we need to recognize in our life. We need to be not only be thinking about those that are here, that are adults, we need to be thinking about the next generation. And before the priest came out of the Jordan, notice the instruction that God gives. And it came to pass when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, take for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest stood firm. You shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge a night. Let me tell you what's happening here. They're making a memorial. Why do you make a memorial? To teach. And in this case, it's to teach a future generation. The generation that did this, they remembered that. But there's another generation that needed to learn this. Joshua 4:6. That this may be a sign among you when your children ask. In time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Children ask a lot of questions. And parents, that's an opportunity. Could you imagine if you had been in that generation that crossed the Jordan and your son or your daughter, what's this pile of stones? You know, there's something about things that really mean something to us. Our children can see it. Could you imagine a child asking a person of that generation and they see the stones and could you see the father's eyes light up? Maybe tears come to his eyes. And he'll sit down with that child and says, son, I want you to know something. I want you to understand what I saw. I want you to understand what happened to my dad and mother. I want you to understand the bad examples, the good examples. I want you to understand what this means and why you are here. Now that's what God wanted. In verse 9, we read about the stones being set up. But I want to go back to our Bible reading. That generation that crossed the Jordan, they took the land. But they did not teach their children. And that's the context here. So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. And then in verse 10, when all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation rose after them who did not know the Lord. Sometimes people ask me, how in the world could churches that would have heard the preaching of some of the great preachers of yesteryear, some of the great debaters and teachers, and you go back and you look at these colleges that are named after these men that did some great things. And how can it be 50 years past and you have churches where these men once preached and these colleges that were named after them teaching that which is absolutely 180 degrees in total opposition to the gospel, to the things these men once taught? It's the problem of another generation. And brethren, we are foolish if we think it'll be any different. Now what I would tell you what I pray in my life that I can learn is that I can't change what everybody else does or doesn't do. But if I'm going to be the exception, I'm going to have to be exceptional. If it's going to be with my children, they're going to stand in the truth. It's not going to be because they're in some church that names itself Church of Christ. It's going to be because they learn about a living faith and they understand what biblically the Church of Christ is and what the biblical faith would demand the path that they walk in. It's not going to be easy. You know, I could imagine some of these parents doing this. Walking by that pile of stones. Hey, Dad, they're going fishing in the Jordan. I don't know, maybe they're going fishing in the Jordan. You know, the Andy Griffith show, you remember, you know, the guy Oakley walking there. Here he's going. They go to the Jordan River, and there's a pile of stones. Dad, what does this mean? Oh, we taught you this in Bible class. We set this up when we crossed over the Jordan River. Don't you know, this is what done. These are the pile of stones we crossed. Oh, okay, let's go fishing. What have you taught your child? I got facts. Yeah, the pile of stones we crossed the Jordan, but was there any emphasis? Was there any heart? You can come and teach your children all the facts in the world, what the plan of salvation is, how the church ought to worship, what morality is, and you can do it in a total artificial way. We've got to go beyond just catechisms where we've got questions and answers and them being memorized to the ultimate basis of a biblical faith that's based on heart and commitment. And parents, you're the one above anybody else that can establish that, but you cannot instill in your children that which you don't have. The next generation didn't have to fight the battles of the previous generation. Sometimes in churches, people have described Christians as being in one of three categories. Now, this is not a biblical designation, but probably you can see it in this lesson. Sometimes they'll talk about first-generation Christians, second-generation Christians, third-generation Christians. Where the first-generation Christian is the one who probably had to come out of a denominationalism or come out of some liberalism of some form or really make some tremendous sacrifice to separate from family. They stood and had to fight for their faith, but it didn't come easy to them. Sometimes they describe second-generation Christians as ones who were raised by the first generation. And they didn't have to make fights. They didn't have to find their faith out of a fight or a battle. And now I want to say something about that description. I believe first generation Christians can raise first generation Christians. And what I mean by that, it's very important as parents that I allow my children to go through challenges where they may have to stand where nobody else is standing. They're hard decisions that they face. Here is a decision between attending services or attending some school function, whether or not it's me doing right and going against what my friends want to do in class. There's various steps like that. It's those battles. Rather than trying, I don't want my child to be left out. I don't want them to feel different. This is where many times we tear away their faith. We're afraid for them to fight. We're afraid for them to suffer. And that is how faith is established. Every generation's got to cross the Jordan. Every generation's got to fight their battles. I hope this is not a negative lesson. Because frankly, I'm going to tell you, fighting the battle of the Lord and suffering and hurting and going through that uncertainty, but trusting God and coming through it is a wonderful thing. We're in football season right now, and could I give some illustrations of some of the Auburn games recently? Where you're down by two touchdowns, you're down, it looked bad, it looked like you're not going to make it, and suddenly your team comes back and they fight their way through an uncertainty to the end and they win. You know, that from a sports standpoint, those are the things you glory in. As a Christian, we too fight those battles. Don't run from those battles. The very essence of apostasy is when we want it easy and we want numbers and we're afraid to hurt anybody's feelings. 2 Timothy 4:2. Preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears. They will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will be turned their ears away from the truth and be turned aside into fables. The church you're attending, what are you hearing from the pulpits? The home where you're a part of, what are your children hearing? We need to be loving, we need to be patient, we need to be humble, but we also need to be direct. And we need to be specific, and we need to make applications. You see, there's always the pull of the culture to compromise. And many over time follow that pull. One more time for us in the teaching of our children. The Bible says, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, and ye fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. I want to end with an illustration and then extend the invitation to you. I heard the story once of a man who got the terrible news that their son was dying of a fatal disease. They went to all the doctors they could, and they found out that the child was just going to fade away. It was cancer, and that it was inevitable that the child would die. The day came to where there was just hours for the child to live, and the child had consciousness. And the dad and the mother were there trying to comfort the child. The child looked up at his daddy and he said, "Dad, when I get to heaven and I see the Lord, I'm going to go up to Him and tell Him what a great dad I was given." And I thought about that, and that's a beautiful thought. But one day my children will stand before the Lord. And I hope on that day they'll stand and they will go into all of heaven. And I pray that at Judgment Day, my children will look back upon myself and my wife and that event that we will have done in our own feeble way, flawed way, failures in some ways, no doubt. But I pray that one day, not just us, but every one of us, you and I together, that our children, when they appear before God, they'll say, "You helped me. You helped me to see. You helped me to cross the ultimate Jordan River of death. And thank you." Let us never forget the great blessings of our God. There's not a battle He tells us to fight that we can't win. But we have to trust Him. We have an invitation now. We extend an invitation to become a Christian. Did you notice how the crossing of Jordan in 1 Corinthians 10 was really likened to baptism? They were baptized into Moses. Baptism in Romans 6 is described as a death, burial, and resurrection. It is a time where, as you trust in Jesus, knowing He's the Son of God, you repent of your sins, you confess your faith in Jesus. This is a crossing. You cross from the world into the people of God. You cross from worldliness into forgiveness. You cross from a path where it's you and what you do to a time where you hold on to the Lord's hand. No, you're not perfect. No, you don't have everything right. But you got a heart that's willing to trust. Today, there are some who need to cross that Jordan. If you're ready this morning, we urge you to respond to the invitation. If there are any other issues that's holding you back, let's talk about those things. Let's study those things. Let's be found down the path where you've not been this way before, but I'm walking by faith. I'm going to trust my God who will forgive me and lead me and bring great things into my life. If we can assist you in any way, the invitation is extended as we stand and serve.